For What's Universal Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. A U.S. movie theater hit by fatal gunfire. Gunmen in the southern U.S. state of Louisiana opened fire Thursday evening in a movie theater, killing two people and wounding at least eight others before killing himself. Officials say they know the identity of the gunman, but have only revealed that he was a 58-year-old man. The assailant began shooting during a screening of a film called Trainwreck in the town of Lafayette, about 90 kilometers southwest of the state capital, Baton Rouge. There's no word on a possible motive. U.S. and Turkish media reported Thursday that President Recep Tayyip Erdogan agreed to let U.S. fighter planes use Incirlik Air Base in Turkey to launch attacks on Islamic State militants inside Syria. Washington declined to publicly discuss details of new cooperation between the two countries. Top Obama administration officials faced tough questioning in the first Senate hearing on the Iran nuclear agreement. Secretary of State John Kerry urged members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Thursday to accept the accord.
The choice we face is between an agreement that will ensure Iran's nuclear program is limited, rigorously scrutinized, and wholly peaceful, or no deal at all.
Secretary Kerry testified at the hearing along with Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz and Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. Congress has to accept or reject the accord by mid-September. President Barack Obama is on his way to Ethiopia and Kenya, where he'll be highlighting growth in American economic links with sub-Saharan Africa. He arrives today in Kenya to attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi. Later, Mr. Obama will become the first American president to visit Ethiopia. Human rights groups are calling on him to call for fundamental human rights reforms. This is VOA News. Amnesty International released a report saying Burundian authorities repressed political demonstrations earlier this year as if they were an insurrection by using lethal force to silence anti-government protesters. The Amnesty report says the investigation found that police shot unarmed demonstrators who were running away from them. It also charges police used tear gas and live ammunition even when children were in the area. Dozens of people were killed in the unrest. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter made an unannounced visit to Baghdad Thursday. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports.
Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren said Carter is visiting Iraq to see what the U.S. can do to improve the security situation. The next major move for the Iraqi government, supported by a U.S.-led coalition, is the retaking of Ramadi, a strategic city held by ISIS.
Iraqi security forces are positioning themselves in various locations around Ramadi in an ascent to place a noose around the city.
He says between 1,000 and 2,000 militants are believed to be holding Ramadi, but that their supply lines are being cut off by Iraqi troops. Heather Murdoch, Cairo.
Inter-Korean talks to discuss holding joint events to celebrate Korea's liberation from Japanese colonial rule have ended without a deal. The talks between South Korean representatives and their North Korean counterparts were held in the North Korean border town of Kaesong Thursday. The two sides failed to reach agreement due to differences over how to proceed with the events to mark the 70th anniversary of Korea's liberation next month. Colorful facial adornments known as bindis have long been worn by women across South Asia as a fashion accessory or religious signifier. But now they also provide essential nutrients. Jivan Bindi, or life-saving bindi, contains iodine, which could help tens of millions of women in India who suffer from iodine deficiency. The creators say the adhesive-backed felt bindis, which appear identical to ones that serve merely decorative purposes, dispense a daily dose of the essential element through the wearer's skin. It's estimated more than 71 million Indians suffer from iodine deficiency disorders. The European Union opened an antitrust case against six major U.S. film studios and Sky UK of Britain, charging they unfairly restrict customers' access to content within the European Union. The EU Commission's statement of objections named Disney, NBC Universal, Paramount Pictures, Sony, 20th Century Fox, and Warner Brothers. The EU says UK's licensing agreement with these companies requires it to allow viewers access to their films only in Britain and Ireland and not the rest of the EU. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today's Friday, July 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. President Barack Obama arrives today in Kenya, the home country of his father.
Kenyans are very, very excited. Kenyans are, relieved, actually, that the president is coming before the end of his term.
Gladys Wanga is a member of Kenya's parliament. The African Union hopes President Obama's visit will help strengthen economic and security ties between Washington and Africa. We will profile an artisanal businessman in Kenya's informal sector. And a UN committee says France is too slow in investigating sexual abuse allegations against French soldiers in the Central African Republic.
14 French soldiers on duty in the Central African Republic reportedly are charged with demanding sexual favors of young boys in return for food.
SBS correspondent Lisa Schlein in Geneva. Zimbabweans say their 91-year-old president and current African Union chairman is taking too many foreign trips. And a Washington-based group wants to put an end to profiting from Africa's conflicts. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama is expected to arrive in Kenya today, Friday, the home country of his father. This will be his first visit to Kenya as a sitting American president. While in Kenya, Mr. Obama is expected to attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi. Later, he will become the first American president to visit neighboring Ethiopia. Gladys Wanga, a Kenyan lawmaker, says citizens are excited to welcome home the U.S. president. She tells reporter Peter Clotty, Kenyans hope Mr. Obama's visit will strengthen bilateral relations between Washington and Nairobi.
Kenyans and members of parliament are really, really excited. Excitement has hit fever pitch as we expect President Obama in Kenya today. The excitement cannot be described in words. It is really, really. Kenyans are very, very excited. Kenyans are, relieved, actually, that the president is coming before the end of his term, because the visit has been long coming. There's been fear that probably the president might not come during his term as president, and there's relief and there is excitement, and there's just pure joy that our son, as we know him here in Kenya, will be visiting with us.
What are the expectations when it comes to the relationship between Washington and Nairobi? Because, as you said, Kenyans see him as the son of the soil.
Of course, the Kenyans expect, particularly because he's coming on this Global Entrepreneurship Summit, Kenyans, of course, are expectant of increased trade. And you know that we have come from a point where we, as a country, there had been a bit of uncertainty as to our relationship with Washington because of ICC cases that both our president and deputy president were facing at the beginning, that now the president is out of, but the deputy president still stays with them. There's been a bit of uncertainty as to our relationship, and I think Kenyans are happy that this is coming together now and that the president was able to visit with us. We're expecting, of course, that our tourism that has taken a slump, because of a few challenges of terrorism that we've faced over the last couple of months, is going to come back. And it's a vote of confidence, because if the president of the United States, is able to visit Kenya, then it is, we see it as a vote of confidence to our country.
Some people that I spoke with in Kenya were expressing concern and were displeased that a U.S.-based media company called Kenya a hotbed of terrorism. What can you tell me about this? I'm sure you might have heard this from your own constituents.
Yes, we have had this, and indeed with great concern, because we have had our challenges with terror, which is a global problem currently, and we were not expecting that this would be the description given our country. Now that we are expecting the world at our doorstep, we are expecting the president, we are expecting several business people, entrepreneurs from across the world, and we were expecting really a bit more positive coverage, because this is not how we want to be tagged, because when people tag you as a terror hotbed, it must be of great concern.
Gladys Wangard is a Kenyan parliamentarian. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. An African Union official says President Barack Obama's visit to Kenya and Ethiopia is good news for the continent and the East African region in particular. AU Deputy Chairperson Erastus Mwecha says in addition to Mr. Obama coming to see his extended family, the U.S. president is also coming on a business trip because he's been accompanied by over 1,000 business executives to hold a global business summit. He said Africa is looking for ways to strengthen economic ties with the United States in the form of investment and technology transfer, particularly with the signing last month of a 10-year extension of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Mwecha says Africa also hopes Mr. Obama's visit will further strengthen security cooperation between the continent and the United States.
Now, it's a great day, as you say, for President Obama coming to Africa. And the significance of his visit is that, of course, in addition to him having his whole extended family in Africa, he's also coming on a business trip because he's coming with over 1,000 business executives to hold a global business summit. And that is really what Africa is looking for at the moment, because Africa is yearning for investment. Africa is looking for technology transfer, and Africa is also looking for ways in which to strengthen economic ties with the U.S., particularly now that the president has just signed AGOA. The next step is, of course, to see how do we implement AGOA.
Is Africa looking for the possibility of more countries or more products being added to AGOA?
Yes, in a way, because if you look at AGOA at the moment, just a few countries have really made significant benefits out of it, and very few products are still trading. There is scope, there is potential to expand the products, but also countries that can benefit out of AGOA.
Also, he's coming to Africa when we have all these conflicts, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, we have Boko Haram. Is there a particular help the African Union will be looking for from President Obama?
Yes. As you know, Africa and the United States held a summit last year. President Obama hosted this summit in Washington, and at that summit, quite a number of areas were identified to strengthen cooperation between the U.S. and Africa. The second aspect, between U.S. and Africa, we have been cooperating in a number of areas, like in the area of peace and security. As you mentioned, we have the Al-Shabaab, we have issues in South Sudan, we have U.S. was quite instrumental in Mali, and in other conflict areas. And so this is also an opportunity for us to agree on how to manage or confront the challenges that now face us, particularly on radicalization and extremism, but also terrorism that is a menace, not only in the region, but globally. And of course, the highlight, the summit of all these visits will be, it will address the continent from the African Union Conference Center on Tuesday.
And I want you to talk about that. The president coming to the African Union headquarters, this is going to be the first time, is that right, for a sitting U.S. president?
It's the first time a U.S. president is coming. I must say that under President Bush, he did, of course, elevate the relationship between the African Union and the U.S. by appointing a special ambassador to the African Union. And of course, President Obama has taken that notch higher, because we have had high-level consultations going on between the African Union Commission and the U.S., and now he would be coming and we'll also be having bilateral discussions.
Erastus Mwecha is the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission. He was speaking with me from the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Friday, July 24th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Kenya's 2015 economic survey shows the informal sector employed 11.8 million people last year, working in small and often unregulated businesses. Lenny Ruvaga profiles an artisanal businessman in the informal sector about his challenges and what he hopes will come out of President Obama's visit and the Global Entrepreneurship Conference that the president will attend in Nairobi.
Joseph Omondi works on an earthen stove at his workshop in Korogosho on the outskirts of Kenya's capital, Nairobi. He began working with metal 4 years ago to provide for himself and his young family. Every day, He produces pans, pots, and metal boxes. On average, his business makes $300 a month. Being a low-skilled worker meant that Omondi couldn't join the country's formal employment sector. So he turned to small-scale production. Omondi hopes that the Entrepreneurial Summit will help businesses like his access international markets, especially the U.S.
My prayer is, or rather I hope, when President Obama comes, he gives us advice on how small-scale businesses can access the American market, and then we'll have benefited from the summit. This is my hope.
A new report by the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa says Kenya has the highest informal sector employment in Africa, in large part because the more formal economy can't absorb all the would-be workers. Close to 60 million Kenyans have no formal employment. The government has programs to help youth acquire much-needed capital, such as the Youth Enterprise Fund and the Uwezo Fund, which offers loans to young adults and women starting businesses at zero interest. Kwame Owino at the Institute of Economic Affairs, IEA, a research group that focuses on fiscal accountability, says entrepreneurial support could spark industrialization in Africa.
So it's obviously inevitable. Now, whether that will happen in each and every African country is entirely a different thing, because every country has its own peculiar policy problems that they need to fix. But yes, I think entrepreneurial innovation is required for most of the African continent.
In a few weeks, Kenya will host the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, the first to be held in sub-Saharan Africa, emphasizing the importance of entrepreneurship needed to spark industrialization on the continent. Nanya Rubaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
A United Nations watchdog committee is criticizing France for being too slow in investigating allegations of sexual abuse of children by French soldiers in the Central African Republic. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
France started an investigation into the sexual abuse scandal nearly 1 year ago. 14 French soldiers on duty in the Central African Republic reportedly are charged with demanding sexual favors of young boys in return for food. UN Human Rights Committee Chair Fabian Salvioli tells VOA that committee members asked the delegation how the criminal prosecution against the soldiers was proceeding.
The answer was really short. Really, really short. So the government said us there is a trial and I can't give more information. We are, of course, paying attention and we start an investigation, criminal investigation, but it's still and full stop. So no more information about it.
Salvioli says the committee has told the French government to speed up the prosecution and to punish the soldiers if they are found guilty. Given the urgency of the matter, he says the committee has asked the government to give an update on the issue within a year. The committee also has some harsh criticism of Canada's disregard of Indigenous rights as guaranteed under the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights. Committee member Anya Seibert-Faure says the committee is particularly concerned Indigenous women and girls are disproportionately affected by life-threatening violence, homicides, and disappearances. She says many women and girls have been murdered or gone missing, and their cases remain unsolved. She says Canada's responses regarding its handling of this affair are not sufficient.
We were informed that there had already been efforts to do so, but we are still missing information about real investigations and the prosecution. Therefore, we asked the state party to urgently address this issue of these murdered and missing Indigenous women.
Seibert-Faure says the committee proposes Canada conduct a national inquiry into this phenomenon, that it review the relevant legislation and coordinate police responses across the country to prevent the occurrence of such murders and disappearances. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabweans are concerned their 91-year-old president, Robert Mugabe, who is also current chairman of the African Union, is taking too many foreign trips, and they would like for him to stay at home to address the country's faltering economy. Mr. Mugabe is set to embark on several more foreign trips to attend to African Union business. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Since assuming the rotational chairmanship of both the African Union and the Southern African Development Community, President Mugabe has hardly spent a week in Zimbabwe, as he has been traveling to several countries in Africa and beyond to attend to business involving the two continental organizations. But many Zimbabweans, such as Kudzai Gombeza, say Mr. Mugabe should not only address issues affecting Africa, but also focus on problems bedeviling his own country. Gombeza says the president's trips are draining the national fiscus.
I feel it's very unfair for the president to be traveling so much, especially in the case that our economy is not looking so good. You see, when he goes out of the country, he has a large entourage, he's got a lot of people that he travels with. And as far as I know, they say each time he goes out, he's given some money for security reasons, I think, which is unfair because that money can be used for the economy to get better than just traveling.
It is unclear how much Mr. Mugabe spends per trip in travel expenses, personal allowances, and related costs for his entourage, always numbering more than 70, including some top state officials, bodyguards, and family members. Indications are that some of the trips are funded by AU and SADC. Luke Tamborinyoka, spokesman of former Prime Minister and Movement for Democratic Change founding President Morgan Tsvangirai, says the president should prioritize issues affecting Zimbabwe than the entire continent.
It's definitely getting too much. The president is not taking seriously his national responsibility. Considering the magnitude of the national crisis, he ought to sit down and consider coming up with proper solutions to the monumental crisis facing the nation.
But political analyst Goodson Nguni, who has links with ZANU-PF, says the president does not use local resources when he is traveling on AU and SADC business. However, Mukono insists that Mr. Mugabe should delegate his deputies at the AU and SADC to take care of most issues in order to allow himself to attend to critical matters back home. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The Washington-based Enough Project says it wants to put an end to people profiting from Africa's violent conflicts. The nonprofit group has launched a new initiative called The Century, which it says will work to eliminate violent conflicts by stopping the companies and unscrupulous individuals who are making money from those conflicts. Ian Biu of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program reports from Washington.
Africa loses a whopping $50 billion or more each year to illicit economies, according to the United Nations Economic Commission on Africa. The commission says that number actually exceeds the amount Africa receives in development funds by about $4 billion. Akshaya Kumar, a policy analyst at the Enough Project, says part of the work of the Century Initiative is to trace the complicated web of money that fuels conflicts like the one in South Sudan.
A lot of effort has already gone into trying to mediate peace between President Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar. But until now, there hasn't been a really detailed financial investigation into those who are funding and fueling this war.
Kumar says policymakers around the world typically lack credible research and evidence to make their case against those who make their livelihood off the pain and suffering of people caught up in violent conflicts.
Our hope is that with this initiative, policymakers and those who are working on the peace process will be better equipped to construct the leverage that's really necessary to fight the continued intransigence of both warring parties in South Sudan, and also that they'll be able to tackle the enablers and the financiers who are enabling both sides to continue fighting on.
Under this new initiative, Kumar says even those who made illegal gains off conflicts in the past, including those in southern Sudan, will be investigated.
Well, what the Century seeks to do is the really detailed investigative work to identify where people have hidden their stolen assets, to identify how the different warring sides are buying their weapons, to look into how so many billions of dollars were stolen from South Sudan and even before then from southern Sudan following the signing of the CPA until today.
Kumar says the sentry will then take all that information, package it, and use laws already on the books to expose money launderers, wildlife poachers, and other criminals to authorities. The sentry's new report points to figures from 2014 indicating the projected oil revenue for South Sudan that year was roughly 12.8 billion South Sudanese pounds, or about $4.3 billion. That nearly equals the funds allegedly stolen in 2012. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the volleyball. Cameroon pipped Tunisia by 3-2. Rwanda beat Mauritius 3-0. And Algeria dismissed Botswana 3-0 at the Africa Men's Volleyball Championships in Cairo, Egypt on Thursday. Today, Friday, Kenya play Algeria. Mauritius face Tunisia. Egypt tackled Botswana as Cameroon play Morocco. On Saturday, Kenya play Botswana. Rwanda face Tunisia. Algeria and Egypt clash as Morocco play Mauritius. On Sunday, Cameroon play Rwanda as Tunisia face Morocco. In football, Rwanda's APR pipped Burundi's LLB 2-1 as Sudan's El Ahly Shandi edged Somalia's Higen 3-2. At the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Thursday. Today, Friday, Sudan's Khartoum National face Kenya's Gor Mahia as Zanzibar's KMKM play Tanzania mainland's Young Africans. Tomorrow, Saturday, Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority faces South Sudan's Malakia as Ethiopia's Adama City play Tanzania mainland's Azam. On Sunday, Gor Mahia play Djibouti's Telkom as Young Africans engage Khartoum National. Meanwhile, 53 African countries are in the 2018 FIFA World Cup preliminary draws in St. Petersburg, Russia tomorrow, Saturday. In athletics, a showdown between Africa's all-time fastest 400-meter sprinters Isaac Makwala of Botswana and South African Wade van Niekerk is the draw card at the two-day IWF Diamond League starting in London, Britain today, Friday. Kenyan David Rudisha and Botswana's Nigel Amos face off in 800 meters. Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman and Kenyan Asbel Kiprop clash in the 1 mile. Kenyans Jairus Kipchoge Birech, Conseslus Kipruto and Paul Kipsiele Koech look set to dominate the 3,000-meter steeplechase. South Africans Zach Fisa and Kotso Mokwena contest the long jump as Cornel Fredericks and Louis Fancel compete in 400-meter hurdles and Anaso Jobodwana runs 200 meters. In the women's events, Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore and Nigerian Blessing Okagbara Igoteguanor contest the 100 meters as Nigerian Regina George runs 400 meters. South African Wenda Nell, Kenyan's Eunice Sum and Mercy Cherono, along with Morocco's Rababi Arafi, compete in women's 400-meter hurdles, 800 meters, 5,000 meters, and 1,500 meters, respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Barack Obama has left the United States for a trip to Ethiopia and Kenya, homeland of his father, as he highlights growth in American economic links with sub-Saharan Africa. He is scheduled to arrive today, Friday, in Kenya, where he will attend the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Nairobi. Later, he will become the first American president to visit Ethiopia. Human rights groups have urged the president to use his trip to call for fundamental human rights reforms in both countries. That is it for this Friday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oldman, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shumari and his guest discussing obesity, an issue of concern all over the world. This lighthearted show also covers topics that are important to you. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa, so we hope you tune in.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa,
we'll discuss the controversial presidential election in Burundi, as Nkurunziza is set to win a third term, and on the ongoing process of lifting presidential term limits in Rwanda that will allow President Kagame to run again. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC. That's next time on VOA Africa.